All right, the offensive line will be unveiled this weekend. D'Amico Ryan's tired of talking about the offensive line. Nick Caserio, D'Amico said that in his press conference yesterday. We'll find that. In the meantime, Nick Caserio was on with Seth and I yesterday, and we previewed the game with the Rams, and he said that the Rams defensive line, one of the best in the NFL.
Yeah, we're probably as ready as we'll be on the offensive line. So, you know, we understand the challenge in front of us against the Rams. I mean, this is arguably like top to bottom, like 1 through 5 when you include Puna Ford in there, which not everybody's really talking about Puna. I mean, they have probably, this is collectively, you know, one of the better defensive lines we'll probably see over the course of the year, just from a 1 through 5 basis. Like, we're going to face good defensive linemen every week, and some teams maybe only have 1 or 2, but, you know, when you look at the Rams, I mean, they literally have 5 guys who are as good as anybody in the league at their respective positions. So we're certainly going to have to account for their defensive line on almost every snap. I mean, Verse kind of moves around the front a little bit. I mean, this is a really good front. Again, it's probably as good of a front, just top to bottom, that we're going to face 1 through 5. So, you know, we're going to need everybody to just focus on their execution, their fundamentals, and their assignment, understand what the intent is on each play, and just make sure the communication is clean. It's going to be a hostile environment. It's going to be on the road. So we just got to make sure we have all 5 doing the same thing. And the tight ends will be a part of it, and the running backs will be a part of it. Quarterback will certainly have responsibility in it as well. So it's going to take a collective effort to handle their defense without question.
They really, you know, they're technically a 3-4 defense, and yet they have, like, the only guy on their defensive line that I think is, like, old school 3-4, and he isn't even, he's really good, is Puna Ford, where, all right, this guy's a defensive tackle. But, like, Braden Fisk and Kobe Turner. Kobe, I always Turner, forget to mention, yeah. Kobe Turner.
Yep.
Like, they've just got, every time I mention the Rams defensive line anywhere online and talk about it in a video, I forget one of them, and a Rams fan swoops in and says, hey, don't forget Kobe Turner. Don't forget Byron Young.
Like, yep.
They've got 5 really good guys on their defensive front.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I feel, this is why it's such a great test for the Texans offensive line in week 1. I feel much, much better about the Texans offensive line. I think they're going to be a better overall unit. I think they're going to have better fundamentals, better technique. I don't think there's going to be as many tackles for a loss. But in pass protection, at times, it's, you can only scheme so much pass protection. Guys are going to have to be one-on-one versus some really good defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the test is. That I don't, like, even if this was the best offensive line in the league, you're going to lose some of those individual one-on-one battles.
Yep.
So going into week 1, where, you know, D'Amico Ryans yesterday said he doesn't know how good the offensive line is going to be. I think the ball is going to be coming out fast early on, and I think they're going to use the running backs as receivers a lot. I think the running backs are going to be chipping the defensive ends. I think that they're going to try to do everything they can to help out the offensive line, and the Rams defense is going to, you know, adjust to that. Then it becomes, when do you take your shots? Because I don't think they can cover Nico Collins.
Yeah.
But they can get to C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
So when you dial up the moments where you have max protection and you're keeping everybody into block except for you feel like you got the right play dialed up for Nico, that's where you're going to get your fireworks. But just like the promo we've been running with Clint the last couple days, I agree with Clint. I think it's going to be probably a relatively low-scoring game, maybe a little bit of a boring game by both offenses.
Yeah.
And it's going to be those shot plays that end up making the difference.
Yeah, I've thought all along this is going to be an under game. I think this game's going under 44. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think both teams have big advantages defensively in the trenches against the other team's offensive line. Texans with their defensive line with Alaric Jackson, he's been, you know, he's their left tackle. He hasn't practiced much because of blood clots. If they've got to get it out fast, and I'm going to play D'Amico here on the offensive line in a second, but as long as we're talking about this, how concerning are these hamstring injuries to Christian Kirk and Braxton Berrios, who would seem to be 2 of the perfect targets to work that quick game, middle of the field type of stuff?
Right. And I think it's very concerning. And it's one of those things that in week 1, I'm really concerned about it because I like Jalen Nowell a lot, but he's a rookie. And slot receiver is one of the toughest positions for a rookie to play. So that's where you have the element of surprise. So the Rams don't know exactly how you're going to use Jalen Nowell. So you can spring that on him. But if this were week 8, that's where I would say, look, man, this is why you draft 2 wide receivers. You got wide receiver injuries, but look, we have depth on the in the wide receiving core. He's not there yet, so I don't know what to expect out of Jalen Nolan week one. Jaden Higgins, I think it's easier to get the ball as a rookie just because his size and his hands alone make him viable,
yep.
Especially if teams are rotating their coverage over to Nico Collins. I think he's going to get his touches and his opportunities. Jalen Nolan can get a little bit dicier. So I don't feel awesome about those guys having the two of you. You got three small, speedy receivers.
Yep.
That you went out and got this offseason, I think specifically to help C.J. Stroud out in the quick passing game.
Yeah.
And when the pass protection isn't great, zoom, there we go. And two of those guys are injured, and one of those guys is a rookie. So for what they really wanted to do this year, I hope at least one of those guys, either Braxton Berrios or Christian Kirk, is healthy and ready to go.
Yeah, might be a Dalton Schultz game. We'll see.
That I want Dalton Schultz. I know people are going to cringe when I say this.
Blocking.
There's times where I want Dalton Schultz helping in there in pass protection.
Yeah, helping a rookie on the offensive line. Well, let's talk about that. Here was D'Amico Ryans. You alluded to this earlier, Seth. D'Amico Ryans. Finally, the offensive line questions about who's going to play and this and that are going to be over because the ball's going to get snapped on Sunday. D'Amico's tired of O-line questions.
Yeah, for our offensive line, we'll see. There's been questions all offseason about our offensive line. Everybody wants to know who's going out there. Who is this guy, this position, that position. It's just a lot of talk that I'm tired of talking about it. Like, it's time to go play and let's see how our five matches up against a really great defensive line. And that's what we'll see on Sunday. Let's see how it all plays out.
Okay, so my question to you, Seth Payne, let's power rank the starting five offensive linemen by level of concern for each of them going into this Rams game on Sunday, with five being the fifth one being the one you're least concerned about, all the way up to number one being the one you're most concerned about going into this game, especially the way you've laid out how all these pieces on the Rams defensive line are so very good.
So you want me to go most concerned to least concerned?
No. Count them up to one. Yeah.
Titus Howard, least concerned.
Yep. Okay.
But he's got a big test this week.
Yes.
He's got a really big test. But I'm least concerned about him. Ariante Ursary. I'm going to say Ariante Ursary only because I think that Nick Caley is going to – he's not going to leave him out there on an island.
Okay.
Ariante Ursary is going to have help from a tight end, a sixth offensive lineman, or a running back most of the time. I don't think they're going to leave him out on an island.
Interesting. So he's four for you. So you are least concerned, and this actually makes sense now when you think about how last season went.
Yeah.
And who they've picked up here, the big unknowns on the interior, that actually makes a lot of sense. Sure. Not that Ursary is a known commodity, but the two tackles, you're least concerned about the two tackles.
Just by virtue of also what they can do with play calling to help him.
Yep. That makes sense.
Then I'd go Ed Ingram.
Ingram three, okay.
Ed Ingram, I think Minnesota, had him as a starter for a couple of years, and ultimately he fell out of favor with them up there. I think this might end up being a better scheme fit for Ed Ingram. So I don't feel awesome about him, but I'm not like you can have a good offensive line with if Ed Ingram is one of those guys.
Okay.
Then I would go Laken Tomlinson, and then I would go Jake Andrews. I'm most concerned about. He's only played 70. He's had 70 plus snaps of offensive line snaps in the NFL.
Yep, yep.
I feel good about Jake Andrews in the run game. It's pass protection, and in those moments where he is one on one, in training camp I saw at times defensive linemen have success against both him and Patterson. I didn't feel great about him or Patterson in pass protection, and I felt better about Jake Andrews as a run blocker. So I'll put him at number one, and he's got some really good interior defensive linemen he's going against.
No doubt, man. This game is flush with really intriguing matchups. Probably the most exciting matchup in this game, I would say, would be the tag team of Nacua and Adams against the tag team of Stingley and Kamari Lassiter. I mean, that's the one with the biggest star power, the highest level of just the highest level of play. You're talking about Davante Adams, who may not be at the tippy top of receivers anymore, but we saw last year he's still pretty good. Puka Nacua, when healthy, is in that upper tier. And then Stingley's the best corner in the game, and Lassiter, I think, is on track to become a Pro Bowl caliber corner if he's not there already. This was Nick Caserio on our show yesterday talking about what Davante Adams brings to the Rams offense?
No, Devontae brings a lot. I mean, he's been a very productive player in this league for a long time. I think the one thing that he provides, he has an element of position versatility. He can line up in multiple spots. He can play in the perimeter. He can play inside the formation. You know, when he was with the Jets last year, I mean, he hit us on a touchdown pass there on third down coverage, you know, in a slot fade, which we had decent coverage. I mean, JP was in a good spot, but, you know, Devontae ended up making a good move. So the thing about Devontae, he does a number of things well. He's a very smart. He's a very instinctive player. He'll probably be lined up all over the formation. Puka gives them some flexibility as well. Atwell is a little bit more, I would say, specific to pass game. You know, maybe third down kind of brings a speed element. This is where, going back to what I said a little bit earlier, there's going to be an element of kind of figuring out where are they lined up, how are they deploying them, how are they utilizing them. But, I mean, Devontae is a really good football player, and he certainly presents challenges on the offensive side of the ball, and you know, no question.
There's a name Nick brought up in there, Tutu Atwell, who's their third receiver. You know, this might be one of those games, Seth, where it's, you know, Adams and Nacua versus Stingley and Lassiter kind of cancel each other out. You know, they, each side will make some plays here and there. But then, especially with Sean McVay pushing the buttons on this thing, he's such a good play caller, that we're going to look at the box score after the game, and especially if the Rams win, and it's going to be Tutu Atwell with, you know, six catches for 110 yards because he ate up whoever the third corner was out there for the Houston Texans. Jalen Petrie, he ate up Jalen Smith, or he, you know, the safety's got a little sideways covering him, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I think Jalen Smith is going to be a guy to watch over the first few games just to see how much they trust him, how much they work with him. You've pointed this out. I think sometimes maybe we're overly concerned about the depth at secondary just because the starters are so good that the drop-off is that huge. Whereas there's lots of good defenses that have the same concern. I mean, the Bills up there don't even know who the hell their starting cornerbacks are going to be this week now. Their defensive backfield is a mess. Not in their defenses hurt them in the playoffs, but it's not. There's no team in the NFL that has starters on the two deep all across the board.
At corner. It's one of the hardest positions to find, guys.
And that's if you need something to soothe you a little bit with the questions about depth in the secondary, this is why you have a good pass rush. Your pass rush is supposed to be the thing that makes your defensive, your backup secondary better. It makes it a little bit easier for them. It just gets tense because even if you have the best pass rush in the history of the NFL, there's going to be plays where nobody gets home. So I think I don't like the depth at secondary, but it's not so glaring compared to the state of affairs on most NFL teams.
Yep, agreed. We talked about the corners, the safeties, Kalen Bullock and then C.J. Gardner-Johnson is back. He's ready to go. He's healthy. He's going to play on Sunday. Sean McVay was asked in his press conference earlier this week that the Texans have C.J. Gardner-Johnson back. What does that mean?
You feel him. I mean, when he played Philly last year, he made a bunch of big-time plays in some critical situations. You know, he's really productive in both phases. I think he's got a great concept trigger. There's a toughness that fits what they've done each of the last couple of years. And so, you know, what they do is they play their style of play at a really high level. DeVito does an excellent job with Coach Burke of being able to mix it up. But there's, you know, these guys, they play connected. 11 as one. They play tough. They fly to the football. They attack at the football. And this guy will be a great extension of that. So even though you might not have a lot of representative clips, you know, we know what kind of player this guy is. I got a lot of respect for him. He made some big time plays in that divisional loss last year for Philly.
I think the interesting thing with Sean McVay versus C.J. Gardner-Johnson specifically is that McVay knows that C.J. Gardner-Johnson sometimes can get overly aggressive. And, you know, he talked about it on the Pivot podcast, C.J. Gardner-Johnson did, about how in the Super Bowl he knew that he had to be a safety net. You know, he had to be a backstop. He couldn't be a guy that was coming up and making all these plays all the time. He had to just be conservative. And I think it's a real sign of maturity. He understood it. But that was the test in that moment, in that game versus the Chiefs. I wonder if week one, when he hasn't played all preseason long, if McVay's going to just be waiting to bait him a little
maybe.
Bit. And like C.J. Gardner-Johnson might have to just give himself that same talk that he did before the Super Bowl of, all right, I'm going up against McVay. McVay's going to try to bait me. McVay's going to try to get me to come up and bite on something that I got to be really dialed in on this.
Yeah. I mean, I have to imagine D'Amico's in his ear telling him that exact thing. You know, it's I'm excited to see C.J. Gardner-Johnson in a Texans uniform. Well, we got a few practices. You know, we got about a week's worth of practices, and then he went down with that injury. So he's ready to go. He's back. He actually D'Amico revealed this. He was actually doing some things at practice last week. So he's going to be ready to go on Sunday. Hey, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610, presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. All right, emergency pettycast. There's been a lot of petty out there this week. College football coaches, I think this is the first college football season where we've done the pettycast, and I forgot just how petty college football coaches can be. And sometimes we need to address it later in the week because they don't do their press conferences till Tuesday. So we've got some college football petty and some Cardi B petty coming up in the next segment. Stay there. Payne and Pendergast, you know, they say fantasy football brings people together. I am getting more texts from my friends that don't live in Houston about fantasy football this year than I think I've got more texts this year than like the last 4 or 5 years combined. And it's strange because the Texans don't have a lot of guys way high up the fantasy rankings other than Nico Collins. He's right. Like the only one, which I guess generates more questions because you know about the top guys already. It's like, hey, is Christian Kirk, how involved is he in things?
Well, last year you had so many potential wide receivers that you know people were we got a lot of questions last year about specifically, okay, wait, who is the top guy for the Texans?
We didn't
obviously
know.
Nico ended up being the guy. But I think that this year, maybe it's a combination of Nico being more obviously the guy, and then with Joe Mixon being out.
Yeah, that's probably who's the running back going to be? Yeah, you nailed it. That's it. Because I'm thinking of what the questions have been, and a lot of them have been about, you know, who's been getting a lot of the carries, that kind of
thing. Last year it was a feeling like, okay, Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs, their value is probably driven down by the congestion at the top of the wide receiver chart. Whereas the running backs for the Texans this year, it's almost like, okay, is Nick Chubb really going to get them any yards? Like, there's really uncertainty about which guys the Texans are even going to lean into.
I could see a scenario where by week four, Woody Marks is getting the lion's share of the carries.
Or especially when you consider total touches.
Yes.
Because him as a receiver, they might really use him as a receiver. So
that's a
little nugget I drop whenever I talk to people. Preview, I've been on, you know, with on LA stations or social media channels a couple times. Like, I'll be like, oh, here's a little tidbit for you. I think Woody Marks, not whether fantasy or not, I think Woody Marks is going to end up playing more of a role than people outside of Houston might expect.
I've told everybody, get Woody Marks. If he's still sitting there in the 13th round or something like that, just take him, stash him. It may not come to fruition, but whoever else you're going to take there probably won't come to. And, you know, those are like 7th-round picks in the NFL. You know, like, and you get down to that level of the draft.
I think Chubb's an interesting one because I think he's the obvious go-to on the goal line.
Yes.
And I don't know what his total yardage is going to be or anything. I don't know how many breakout runs he has in him right now, but he's still strong.
Yeah.
Like, his legs are so – he might not have the same pop or explosiveness, but he's got good vision. He makes good decisions, and he's strong. And when it comes to getting 2 yards down on the goal line, I think he's going to – I don't know how many touchdowns he gets, but I expect him to be the touchdown leader amongst the running backs.
You get 12 carries for 42 yards, but you get a couple touchdowns in there. You're one of the leading scorers on the week in fantasy at that position. Chubb would be. All right, emergency pettycast. Speaking of Stephon Diggs, wide receiver last year. So Cardi B was confronted by the media, Seth, coming out of
Cardi B. For those of you our age and up, is a very, very famous hip hop artist.
Yes. So she's coming out of some building yesterday, and the media is waiting there. The paparazzi are waiting there for her, and I guess there's some pregnancy speculation with her, and the speculation is that she got pregnant with Offset, rapper, whilst dating Stephon
Pregnant
Diggs.
With the, like, she's going to give birth to Offset the rapper? Yeah, or he impregnated
her? No, impregnated her.
Okay.
Yeah, impregnated her.
I don't know what the kids are doing these days. There's all kinds of weird stuff going on. Yeah.
So I'll let you take a listen, because the reporter yelling the questions, you can hear her, and she throws a pen at him at the very beginning of this thing right here. Here you go.
Hey, Cardi, you're beautiful. Yeah. Thank you.
Cardi, insiders are claiming that Offset is publicly bragging about getting you pregnant for the fourth time. Do you foresee any paternity issues with Stephon Diggs?
Stop disrespecting me. Don't disrespect me. Cardi, how you feeling?
Cardi, your court look is amazing.
You're amazing, Cardi. I still love you, even though you just threw some stuff at me.
I don't care. You're disrespectful. Don't do that. Do you see women asking those type of questions to me?
No, ma'am.
She's a queen.
It's a legit question.
Why do you feel as a man you get to ask me those type of questions? Act like you have some manners.
That's right.
And your mama taught you respect women.
That's right.
You all right,
gorgeous,
Cardi.
Cardi. Go ahead, Bronx. You were so.
And you could thank him. I'm not playing around. I was very nice. I was very kind. But you're not going
to. Cardi, I love you. It's just a question.
Nobody's going to get that.
Okay. I feel like, Sean, I do we need to clarify that that's not a reporter. Like, that's not like, hi, this is Jim Schwartz from the Wall Street Journal. You're beautiful.
Let me read you the Tupa. While making her way out of an L.A. courtroom on September the 2nd,
yeah.
Cardi B was asked about speculation that she's pregnant with baby number 4 amid her divorce from estranged husband Offset and her romance with NFL star Stephon Diggs. As the journalist inquired about the possible paternity of her rumored child, Cardi appeared to take a pen from someone asking her to sign an autograph before turning her attention to the line of questioning and threw the pen at the journalist.
Who are you reading that by?
That would be from E! Online.
Okay.
E! Online.
So that's an actually, okay, that guy needs to lose his job. If he's an actually actual
journalist.
They're
saying he is. I mean, I just said he was a journalist.
Not for asking the question, but for saying, you're beautiful, I love you.
Well, you know, sometimes you got to sprinkle a little sugar on it to get the answer that you want, you know?
Okay, so this is the thing. I think if she was or was not with Stephon Diggs, it never struck me as those two that had a type of relationship where they'd given each other the, you know, she was wearing his Letterman's jacket and they had a pre-marriage necklace or something on.
He's handing out pink powder to people on boats and whatnot.
I think with Stephon Diggs and Cardi B, there's a very good chance that there's just two adults that are hanging out and enjoy each other's company. And they're going to do what they do. Yeah.
I can't tell from the article if there's an overall question as to whether or not she's pregnant. Because coming out of the courtroom, you can't really tell. She's got.
There have been some shots of her coming out of the courtroom where it looks like she's almost
showing,
definitely pregnant.
Yeah. I'll have to check with across the hall with the. This is probably a topic.
It's like if she had gained that much weight, and it would be showing in her face. You know, like, and it's not.
Yeah,
so it's like it's.
Okay.
I think that's the speculation.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not a reporter like that guy. So I don't know.
Diggs is probably glad it's not his kid. Like,
yeah, no kidding.
Let somebody else pay the freight on that one. Yeah.
Yeah. What's she in court for? Is this over that shooting from a few years ago?
I'm not sure. It doesn't say the article. I don't want to skim the article while I'm on the air with people. This would be her fourth kid. She's got Culture, Wave, and Blossom are the names of her three other kids. 7, 3, and 11 months old. Oof. It's a busy house right there, man. All right, continuing with the emergency pettycast, college football is petty. Dabo Swinney and Brian Kelly, we know that LSU was down 7 at the half, shut out Clemson in the second half of that game and won 17-10. Here was Dabo Swinney's analysis on what that second half looked like.
It's like getting the final exam day one of class. They made a 65, we made a 58. Neither one of us were great.
Okay, so pause right there. So Dabo's saying, like, hey, we, you know, first game, you know, we were both bad. You know, they just happened to win.
They've been graceful in defeat.
Yeah. So that was his like day after press conference, I guess. Brian Kelly got wind of this grade that Dabo gave to his team, a 65. Clemson got a 58. Brian Kelly was having none of this.
We dominated him in the second half. So he's either a really good grader giving himself a 58, or he's a really hard grader on us, or he didn't see the second half, which that might be the case. He might not have wanted to see the second half. So, this is all like, you know, past.
Okay.
Brian Kelly's whipping out some zingers lately.
That was to the level, you probably run into this too, Seth, on social media. That was to the level where I need to check and make sure the account tweeting this out is not a parody account that made Brian Kelly say things in AI.
AI thing or something.
I'm like, wow. Because I've watched hundreds of Brian Kelly press conferences. He used to coach at my school. That's as kind of irritated and subsequently petty that I've seen Brian Kelly in a press. And he's feeling himself a little bit. He's 1-0 for the first time at LSU. He's been there 4 years. He's been 0-1 every single season so far.
Yeah. I might have like really, really talked down to him and just talked about how, I don't know, some classes are pass fail. And sometimes, you know, a young man needs to learn in life that you either succeed or you fail in any given endeavor. You know, maybe somewhere along the way that Dabo Swinney will learn this lesson.
Yeah.
You know, but as I hear it, that sounds like the rationalizations of a 12-year-old.
That's right. Speaking of former Notre Dame coaches, so Lou Holtz was on Dan Dockage's show up in Indianapolis. And, of course, Ohio State beat Notre Dame for the national championship last year. Dan Dockage asked, did you reach out? Lou Holtz is a noted letter writer. He writes a lot of thank you letters and things like that. So Dockage asked him, or congratulatory letters, stuff like that, did you write Ryan Day a letter after they beat Notre Dame for the national championship?
Hey, Coach, did you reach out or did Ryan Day reach out to you after the national championship?
No, I tell you what, you know, Ryan Day could be Ryan Day. He'd do whatever he wants. I did write him a congratulatory letter, but I never heard back from him. I'm sure he can write, but in any event, he did not answer the letter, but that's his alternative.
Okay.
This is all from when Ryan Day had torn into Lou Holtz for not giving them enough respect leading up to the game last year.
Lou Holtz in 2023 said in leading up to the Ohio State-Notre Dame game that Notre Dame was the tougher team, that Ohio State was a little bit soft and they weren't tough. And then Ryan Day, after Ohio State beat Notre Dame, went off in the on-field interview after the game.
Coach, you knew this one wasn't going to be easy, but it came down to the wire. And what can you say about the performance from your quarterback, Kyle McCord, to finish that drive?
Toughness, that's it. Physicality, cross the board, finish it off, having guts. You know, like, I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now. What he said about our team, I cannot believe. This is a tough team right here. We're proud to be from Ohio, and it's always been Ohio against the world, and it'll continue to be Ohio against the world. But I'll tell you what, I love those kids, and we got a tough team.
Okay. It's kind of wild.
We're often a swing state in elections.
Yeah. We are tough voters.
When has it been Ohio against the world?
I don't know. I don't know why. No, it's never been. Like, you spent.
Are we Midwest or not? Yeah. Nobody's really clear. I don't know.
Right.
Ohio.
I just think it's funny. Like Lou Holtz was expecting a letter back from the guy that yelled him down 2 years ago.
A lot of people criticize Ryan Day for, you know, picking on the low hanging fruit, like, oh, an old man that's not as relevant as he used to be. Why are you calling out Lou Holtz instead of one of these other guys? I could see Ryan Day probably is a guy that really respected Lou Holtz.
Yeah.
And it hurt him personally.
Yep. To see
one of the legends in the coaching ranks to call his team soft.
Soft. Man. That's the big thing.
Soft, because Lou Holtz said that they were soft, man. Yep. Nothing triggers people like being called soft, because that's a reflection on the coach, the players, everything.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And if it's somebody that maybe you really looked up to, you feel betrayed.
Yes.
You want to lash out.
Yep. All right, couple things. Real quick, Texter says Cardi B was leaving the courthouse after having a lawsuit against her dismissed. The lawsuit was filed by a woman who said Cardi assaulted her. So naturally, the first thing Cardi does is assault a guy with a pen, throwing a pen at a guy. Oh, that's great. All right.
The guy could have answered, because she was like, would you ask that question of a man? Well, like, no, I wouldn't be asking if he's about his pregnancy.
How did I not think of that?
Of course, I'm specifically asking about your pregnancy.
Oh my God. That's great. All right. One other thing that people are petty about, that people are texting in about, that has to do with the NFL and your watching experience, that we'll get to. And also, let's circle back to the Astros last night. Where does this win stack up on the importance scale for the Astros this year? That is coming up next.
Called third strike. Chisholm thought it was just off the plate. He has a big argument with Brian Walsh before he leaves the field. Astros hold on to win it 8-7. The Yankees haven't been happy all night long with the strike zone. Chisholm wasn't happy last night with DeJesus either. But the Astros get a much-needed win, and they are now four games ahead of the Mariners with 22 games to go on the season. They pick up a game on both Seattle and Texas. A big win tonight, Blummer.
We're four games up with 22 to go. We're getting into magic number territory now. You know, where they tell you the magic number?
I don't like magic number time.
Why?
I don't like it. What? I don't know why because it always feels like the magic number is just it's just out of your reach. It just every little loss you're like, "Oh, the magic number isn't I don't like it."
I love magic number time when my team is on the good end of the magic number. You know, when it's
No, but even when they're on the good end of the magic number, it's still sometimes it stays stuck at 4.
Yeah.
You know,
you
lose two or three games in a row and it's still stuck at 4.
Yeah.
By the way, that last strike that Chisholm was upset about, on the TV broadcast, did it look like it was a ball?
It was marginal. It's about to pop up on the TV in studio.
Because on the actual, the play-by-play for the StatCast, it's clearly a strike.
It was close. And sometimes when it's on that high upper corner there, you know, when it's not middle-middle, you know, it's not like in the middle part of it.
Yeah.
It's about to pop up on the TV again. I'll let you know. Bellinger just hit a 3-run homer. We hate this. So I hope this game ends well here that I'm watching on TV for the Astros right now. It's 8-7. I hope it ends 8-7. That was a big win last night, man. You know, it's tough in a 162-game season, Seth, to go, that was the biggest win of the year. I feel like I've said that a couple times this year already. That was, considering that you were down 3-0 in that game, you're down 4-1 in that game, coming back from multiple run deficits has not exactly been your forte over the last month, or really over the course of the season. You know, when they were winning games in June, they were kind of close, hard-fought games. There weren't a lot of, you know, there weren't a ton of blowouts in there. A lot of late-inning heroics. Like this felt like what the Astros were doing in June, which was they're not doing it with a ton of like blunt force trauma. They're doing it by stringing hits together, taking advantage of mistakes. You know, the Astros got their, you know, 6th and 7th runs, I want to say, from a balk and a wild pitch. But you take advantage of those things, you know, and you win a game against the team that you're bumping up against in the standings, or at least record-wise, you're bumping up against them right now. That was a good scrappy win last night, is what I'm trying to say here.
It was a good scrappy win. It was obviously, it's very, very clear what a difference Yordan Alvarez makes when he's in the lineup.
Yeah.
Not just because of his individual production, but of the binds that it puts pitchers in. The amount of stress over the course of a 7-game series, especially. I mean, it's the regular season is one thing, but over the course of a 7-game series, having to deal with Yordan 5 times a night, That just taxes a pitching staff, and you get the absolute worst out of him, and it makes everybody else around him better. So Yordan, I mean, man, the fact that they've been load managing him so carefully with an upper body injury now with this mysterious hand injury, you will not catch me complaining about there being too many days between playoff games and the playoffs this year. Whatever the format ends up being, as little load management as they can get away with Yordan, that's one of the absolutely most vital and crucial things during this playoffs.
Yeah, yep, for sure. And he's been, since coming back from the IL, 10 for 23. He's not had a ton of extra base hits, but the base hits have been hard hit. Like last night he had a double that was an opposite field rope over the head of the outfielder, kind of into that nook out there in left field. And then his 3 singles that he had, all hard hit. They were all, and generally speaking, his hits have been, you know, they've been triple digits. Yeah. They've been 100, you know, 103, 105, 110. I'm not worried about the lack. There's been one home run. I'm not worried about the lack of home runs. I think as long as he's making hard contact, those are going to come, I think.
Here are his numbers. 10 for 23 in 8 games since returning from the IL. Just 2 of those are for extra bases, double and a home run.
Yep.
7, though, have left his bat at 103 miles per hour or higher. And he's also got 8 walks.
8 walks
that.
Are big, so, too, man. To your point, like pitchers are being cautious with him right now.
Right, right. And when they are pitching to him, he's making hard contact. Yeah. So I think the power is there. It's, as you had said, just it's about the launch angle a little bit. But I think by the time the playoffs roll around, as long as he's healthy and available, I'm very, very optimistic.
I am too. Okay, so we just did a mini pedicast in the previous segment, and we had a texter text in. This is a good one. This was very topical yesterday. The text, this is from 8068 on the text page. You know what's petty? NFL Red Zone is about to have full commercials, as if the NFL doesn't make enough money already.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm kind of chuckling. I think this is tongue-in-cheek. What happened to this country? That's what a texter, that's called capitalism, which is what this country was founded upon.
So immediately, I'm tell me where I should land on this one, on my skepticism bone, because immediately people are saying, oh yeah, big surprise, ESPN is buying a stake in the NFL, and now all of a sudden you're going to start showing, you know, ads on the Red Zone. And a lot of people pointed out, well, that deal hasn't gone through yet. All right, but at some point the deal was agreed to.
It's agreed to,
and that maybe there were discussions about monetizing different things and everything.
Definitely.
Maybe I'm cynical or whatnot, but I have a hard time thinking that the two aren't related whatsoever.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I'm somebody, Seth, I don't get many Sundays to sit down and watch football all day, because most of the time the Texans are playing and you and I are working on those days. Now that the Texans are good again, it's happening more often because they're playing on a Monday or a Thursday or a Sunday night.
Yeah.
You know, five or six times they're in bye week. You know, the five or six times a year now, Sunday afternoons are open. And when I watch Red Zone, because I don't have, other than the Texans, I don't have a favorite team. I'm a fantasy player. I'm a gambler. I like getting all this stuff fed to me. I love the Octobox. I'm a big fan of that. The non-commercial part of it for me has never been the thing that I've been over the top. If anything, I'm like, oh, I could use a commercial here to go take a bathroom break or something like that. There's people that are really angry about this. I need to wait and see how intrusive it is before I get angry with it.
Well, and I think there's a chance, too, that I think people might not realize how many times when you're watching the Red Zone channel that, like, all right, there's a team down in the Red Zone, but there's a couple of minutes that aren't, they're not big highlight type plays or anything.
Well, especially in the late window when there's only three games, it gets boring almost sometimes.
So I think that they can, I'm not saying, hey, trust Big Brother here, they'll take care of it, it'll be just fine. I think that they can manage it pretty well, that I don't think it's going to hurt the viewing experience as much as people think. But I'm not like a Red Zone fiend or anything where I'm on it all the time, so I don't know.
Scott Hansen, see, I love it. That's what I watch. Scott Hansen, who's the host of it, who I think has one of the best jobs in football, like being like going around to all those games. I'm completely jealous of the job that he has. He was on, I think I saw him on McAfee. He's been on a couple other outlets. And this news, you know, like you can tell he's trying to put a good spin on it here. He's being a company guy with all this. I think the one thing they could do that would be a good PR move, one promise that they could make, they call that period, Scott Hansen calls that period from like 2:45 to shortly after 3 o'clock. He calls it the witching hour, because that's when all the games are ending and there's all kinds of crazy stuff going on. If they could promise that there's no commercials from like 2:30 to 3:15, where you're getting all the fourth quarter stuff going on with no commercial interruptions, I would, if I were upset about commercials, that would soothe me to a pretty large degree right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's, I think, like for me, 80% of why I'm watching Red Zone is for those 45 minutes.
Do you think they end up treating it more like a golf broadcast, where you're not actually watching things in real time nearly as much? That you know, a lot of times it's something
they already
that
do.
They already do.
Okay. Yeah, because sometimes touchdowns are getting scored at the same time, and they're like, let's go back.
Oh, then there you go. Okay. I don't know, but I don't like the. And it's not that I don't like the Red Zone. I'm not one of these people that says if you're a real fan, you watch the entire game and nothing else.
Right.
I don't do well with lots of distractions.
Yeah, it's a mode of watching. Totally.
Yeah, I don't like, my brain gets too scatterbrained. Yeah. So I have to try to just, I thought it was a little disingenuous of Pat McAfee to act like people shouldn't be upset about this or wouldn't be upset
about it. Yeah,
yeah.
I totally
when
understand.
When he works for when he works for ESPN, the company that's buying part of the NFL.
Totally. Yeah, like I'm not upset about it. I understand people being upset about it.
Oh, I totally get it. Yeah. It's something that's really, really cool. I mean, you see this all the time on anything in life, especially in social media and everything. When somebody all of a sudden monetizes it, they get people that they're put out, they're angry that this influencer they love wants to make a living.
You sold out.
And that's when it's an actual person.
Yep.
A lot of times it's somebody, it's a kid. He's like 22 years old and he wants to make it his job. Yep. You're like, oh, you're a sellout. So yeah, when the mega corporation does it, People are going to be upset about it.
Yeah.
Understandably so.
They tout it, as a texter points out, they tout it as 7 hours of commercial-free football. LOL, that's the whole premise. It's not anymore. Now it's you get to, I mean, that's not the premise anymore. Are you telling me that if that's not the premise anymore, that it's all of a sudden an unwatchable product?
Are they still going to tout it as that? No, they're not going to tout it as
you
that.
You know
anymore.
Who else touted that they didn't have commercials at first? The Athletic. And it turns out they needed ads. I say commercials, like advertisements. Turns out they get bought by the New York Times, and the New York Times wants to have advertisements. Do these ads that, and I know TV's different than the written word, but I don't find the ads on The Athletic distracting me from how very good, and The Athletic is very good, how very good the product is. You know, I have a hard time in the medium you and I are in getting mad at an employer or a company using advertisements. I mean, we're about to tell
you. You guys are 30 seconds away from a Texas Star Grill Shop.
Get ready.
Discussion.
Buckle up, all right? I know you want the power ranking of the power rankings at 9 o'clock, but you're going to get a commercial or two in between.
That's true. You know what? I'm glad you said this, because in the interest of full disclosure, we should have said this at the beginning of the discussion, which is that you're about to hear a couple of pimps talk about how prostitution ain't that bad. Yeah.
Did you buy a tractor 30 minutes ago when I was talking about Shoppers John Deere? All right. Oh, that's funny. All right. Into the 9 o'clock hour. Hey, first of the season, power ranking of the power rankings. What? Boy, the experts are all over the map on the Texans going into the season, all over the place. We'll have that for you coming up next.